Hi, it's Tracy. Before we start, I have a request. Okay, it's a little weird, maybe even a lot weird, but hello, 6.5 million downloads on my podcast, and still we haven't chosen a sponsor, right? Yeah, they just haven't been good enough for us, and that's a little weird too. So I decided I'm going to treat this like a sponsorship spot. Many of you know Marcus, my son, who's been the inspiration behind this podcast, the book, my programs, anything at all to do with ADHD. Well, he is graduating from NYU this May, and boy, are we happy that he did it in 4 years. So anyway, Marcus loves to travel, and so he's spending 6 weeks by himself traveling to 5 countries in South America. I don't know about you, but there's no way in hell that I would go to even one country alone. And so we gave Marcus a very low budget. This trip is a combination of his birthday and graduation gift, and he figured it all out himself. He speaks some Spanish, but he hired a Spanish tutor from Ecuador a couple weeks ago, months maybe, who's a professor at a university there, and this professor is helping him with his conversational Spanish. Marcus also changed his phone to Spanish only and all of his apps, and he only watches Spanish TV in preparation for this trip. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of what Marcus is like. Now, Marcus would ultimately like to earn a PhD in psychology. He's fascinated by the brain, learning differences, and particularly how dyslexia impacts math. For the near future, though, he wants to work for a couple of years in New York City. I never thought he'd say that. He was always looking for more nature. So anyway, he's going on this trip, and what he's trying to do is find a job that he can come back to. He's come very close, but still no cigar. So yes, I am hawking my son's skills on these airwaves. He thinks I'm insane. But I'm like, who knows what interesting people are out there? I mean, I found my husband in a personal ad when no one was doing that. So why not find a job using my podcast? I mean, ultimately, finding a partner or finding a job, it's all the same thing, right? It's marketing, just getting the word out. Right job, right person. So that's my weird request. If you have any leads in New York City, Marcus would love to work in advertising or marketing sales. He's a phenomenal researcher. I promise you, he can find anything. He's very skilled in Excel and financial modeling. He'd be amazing in digital advertising or tech marketing. And beyond his hard skills, he's resilient. He's so smart. And he has an exceptional work ethic. And that's not just his mother talking. He's not like me. He prefers not to challenge the status quo all the time. He actually likes structure and systems. And he has so many ideas about how to make things better, faster, more efficient, simpler. So I'm putting this out there to our incredible community. If you know of any opportunities in digital advertising, tech marketing, or sales that are in New York City and could benefit from a bright, hardworking, and respectful young professional like my son Marcus, send me an email at support@tracyoutsuka.com and I will connect the two of you. Look, Marcus represents the very essence of what we talk about here every week, right? The brilliance of thinking differently. And so does his mother. So thank you for letting me be weird. And now let's get on with the show.
Richard Branson, Michael Phelps, Justin Timberlake, James Carville. Wait a minute. Where are the women? Greta Gerwig, Lisa Ling, Audra McDonald, Simone Biles. That sounds like a list of highly successful titans in a variety of industries. They all have ADHD, but you don't hear much about that now, do you? You know what else you don't hear about? Are the 43% of people with ADHD who are in excellent mental health. Why aren't we talking about them and what they're doing right? I'm your host, Tracy Otsuka, and that's exactly what we do here. I'm a lawyer, not a doctor, a lifelong student, and now the author of my new book, ADHD for Smart-Ass Women. I'm also a certified ADHD coach and the creator of Your ADHD Brain is A-OK, a patented system that helps ADHD women just like you get unstuck and fall in love with their brilliant brains. Here, we embrace our too muchness and we focus on our strengths. My guests and I credit our ADHD for some of our greatest gifts. And to those who still think they're too much, too impulsive, too scattered, too disorganized, I say, no one ever made a difference by being too little.
Hello, hello, hello. I am your host, Tracy Otsuka. Thank you so much for joining me here for yet another episode of ADHD for Smart Ass Women. Before we start, I just want to remind you that you may find my book with HarperCollins William Morrow. Did you not know that I have a new book out called ADHD for Smart Ass Women? And you can find it wherever you buy your books. It's a compilation of all of our learnings here on this podcast. So if you'd like more information, go to ADHDforsmartwomen.com. You can find everything about the book there. So now on to the podcast. You know that my purpose is always to show you who you are and then inspire you to be it. And in the thousands of ADHD women that I've had the privilege of meeting, I've never met a one that wasn't truly brilliant at something, not one. And so for all of these reasons, I am just delighted to introduce you to Alyssa Fontaine. Alyssa likes to describe her occupation as a ringleader of a three-ring circus. Can anybody relate to that? She is the married mother of four and works for a nonprofit as a community support worker. Their mission is to empower local women to break the cycle of incarceration, chronic homelessness, mental illness, and addiction. Alyssa also coaches high school cheerleading. Interestingly, the women she works with and the kids she coaches all come from the same community that Alyssa grew up in. Her ADHD has helped her advocate for the women and children and enables them to then advocate for themselves. Alyssa, welcome. Did I get all of that right?
You did beautifully. Thank you.
And Alyssa and I were just talking about this very briefly before. Is this? So I think, did we start talking on Instagram like, I don't know, 4 days ago, maybe even less?
Yeah. It's like 36 hours.
Yeah. So we just started talking on Instagram and I thought, oh my gosh, I really like this woman and I really like her cause, her mission, what she does. And so I want to hear the perspective of an ADHD woman who is literally in the trenches. And so I said to her, Alyssa, why don't you come on the podcast? And she's like, okay. And then I look at my calendar and I don't know what happened. The stars aligned, but literally she was scheduled for the next day, or maybe it was 48 hours later. So
yes.
Sometimes, and we're scheduled out until, I was telling her, the middle of April. So we must have had a cancellation. I don't know what happened, but sometimes the stars align. And so I'm just really grateful that you're here.
I'm excited to be here.
Tell me what happened. Like, how did you end up here? Because you said on your part, it was totally a whim too.
It was not intentional at all. I do listen to the podcast. I started listening to it with my youngest daughter, who is showing some traits. She is very much copy-paste of her mother. So I was talking to some of the ladies in the community about what I do, but rather than being reactive when somebody sends me a text message and I have a complaint email set up for myself where I respond to the person in that email. And then I read it. And then sometimes it's like so ridiculous and I don't revisit it. It just goes away. And then we got to talking about how people, they heard a story about this girl who was sending all of her friends updates to a random Instagram celebrity post for years. And they finally messaged. I was like, how funny. I was like, yeah, let's just do that. Pick one. And they're like, what happens if they're like, we're like, nobody cares what I have to say. So I was like, let's just pick that one. And I was like, she has so many amazing people who follow her. She's like doing all these things right now, like with the book. She's so busy. This is going to get buried very quickly. Here you go. Here's what I do. Send. And I was like, oh my God. Because my thing was like, what's the worst that could happen? I was like, then you share your stories. Because I was imagining it from them. And I was coaching them through what that would look like. And then it happened to me. So, and I went with it.
So you were encouraging someone else to do this, to get out of their own head. So you said, okay, I'm going to do it too. I'm going to find someone that I'd really be interested in speaking with. I'm delighted that you said, you know what? I'd like to talk to her, so I'm going to try. And you had something really interesting to say. And so that's why I want to talk to you especially. So I always want to start with the ADHD diagnosis. So can you tell me, what is your story? Like, when were you diagnosed and how did it come about?
So mine was very quick and intense, like kind of I am. I was 15. I did fairly well until about 14, 15. I was a joy to have in class. I don't recall struggling. I just kind of cruised by and I did cheerleading. I had a normal upbringing and then I got to high school. And I wasn't so charming anymore. And I didn't understand.
What does that mean? What does that mean you weren't so charming?
So I have two older sisters who I felt kind of like cushioned the blows everywhere I went. So I had like pre-exposure to the teachers that I had in the environment. But high school is much bigger. Mm-hmm. And even though I had a community, I joined cheerleading. I knew everything. It was that part came very easy to me. The teachers and those relationships and being held accountable probably for the first time where I couldn't call my mom or my sisters to save me was very hard. And I think I didn't even realize I knew that I had these issues because I was very, very protected and taken care of, thankfully. So I got diagnosed. First, my mom took me to church and asked Father to pray for me. That was not my first preferred route, but she eventually was open to seeking other help because I was struggling. And we went to whoever we could find in the white pages, I think, at that time.
So can I ask you, so what were the symptoms? Clearly, there was a transition and you went from probably a small school, right, that was really protected to a big giant school where you didn't really know many people and you didn't really know the teachers. And so what was happening? Was it didn't sound like problems socially. It sounded like you started to have problems with school. Was that
with
what
school? I didn't know how to do school, apparently.
And prior to that, were you an A student? No problems?
I mean, I just kind of achieved. I didn't look to overachieve or slack off. Okay. I just kind of hung out. I was always entertaining the teachers. I was oohed and awed over. I'm the baby of the family. So having that taken away, I didn't struggle with wanting to be the center of attention either. It just was different. I was like, I don't know what to do.
So you were really well liked in your old school. And then you got to this new school. And was it that you were just kind of ignored?
I was treated like everybody else, and which is good. I didn't know that it was not a thing, but I'm really glad it happened.
You know, what's interesting about that, though, is that for us, when we feel like we're one in this huge group, then that really affects our motivation, or like I tend to use the term inspiration, like how inspired we are, right? Because there's nobody there that really sees you. You're just one of many. And so that is a common time that we will struggle. So I find that interesting.
I wasn't used to having to ask for help. I've never asked for help. I was always gone to. So I didn't know how to ask for help, I guess, is a better way to reframe it, because it sounded really entitled and bratty. And I am not. I wasn't stomping my feet like, why don't you like me?
Oh, no. Trust me, that's not how it came across. It came across as you just really fit the mold before and people knew who you were. And if you needed something, you know, you could speak out versus suddenly you're in this big giant pool and you don't even know who to ask for help. You don't know how to ask for help. Sounds like you didn't even know, do I even need help? Right.
Yeah. I just assumed it was going to get done somehow. I don't know who I thought was going, how, I didn't know. I had no concept of connecting that. I had no idea what I was doing.
It sounds like school got a lot harder.
Yes. And I realized I didn't know how to count. I struggled with that because I didn't know my right from my left either. And that was because of cheerleading. Because we start at 5 and we only go to 8 and then start all over again.
What does that mean?
So when you start a routine, you count at 5. So you'll start 5, 6, 7, 8, then start doing motions and something on 1 and then 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So you just count to 8 and start all over.
That sounds more confusing. Okay.
Yes. And then we do crowd right and left. So this is my right hand, but this is left. So I really struggled with the transitions, and I didn't understand how no one else had the same problem.
Okay, so what happened?
I was getting very frustrated, but I wasn't allowed. I don't like attention. So I was just like shutting down. I'd be in the bathroom a lot. I would kind of disappear. My grades started struggling. And in cheerleading, you're accountable. Your grades have to be a certain grade point average. And mine was not. I was really frustrated. And I was like, well, how come I'm not getting help? And they're like, you have to ask for help if you need help. I'm like, oh. It was like, I didn't know. And so it was like a realization for me to navigate growing up. That was like my coming of age. Like I have, oh, okay. I'm not a baby. I have to ask for help.
So then what happened?
I didn't ask for help and it got worse. I was like, okay. And I didn't, it just kept repeating. It was a joking incident in the hallway. And I made a not nice comment to a football player who was much taller than me. He was my friend. It was joking, but it was overheard and taken in the wrong context. So I was referred to the counselor. And then that's when they involved my mother about mental health. And my mom has never dealt with anything like that. My sisters, no one's ever had anything like that in our family. But we went to a doctor. She said, here, fill this out. And I said, okay. So I checked all the marks and she looked at it and she said, yeah, it adds up. So you're bipolar. And I was like, okay. And my mom didn't know the questions to ask. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like when they do the strep swab, it came back positive. That's okay, cool.
You listen to the doctors.
Yeah. And so my mom tried her best to do her research. My dad worked, my sisters, we all did cheerleading. We're busy. So my mom did her best and tried to find what was out there in our neighborhood. Not very much. We were limited to who would be willing to take our insurance and who would be willing to see us nearby and accommodate, like fit into our schedules in school. So we were given what we were given. So I don't even remember what I was put on. I just know it was bad. And it just,
lithium?
I don't think lithium yet. It was something else. And I just plummeted.
So you did worse, of course, if you're not bipolar, you did worse on the bipolar medication that you were given. So instead of getting better, you got worse and worse. And I'm curious, what were the symptoms? Like, what did you do that was so out there that they even considered that it might be bipolar disorder?
I think it was because of the incident in the hallway.
One incident?
Yes, because my sisters were very well behaved. So then it came back to the sisters. And
Jeez. Were you struggling with depression as well at that time? So was it, you were excited?
It was just in school, yeah. And when I just went into cheerleading, I was fine. And we didn't know anything.
Alyssa, I am so sorry. I mean, that's literally malpractice. You know, it's just like, oh my gosh, from one incident. So you're on this bipolar medication, you're getting worse and worse, and nobody can recognize that you're getting worse and worse. So maybe you're
they said give it 6 weeks. My mom was like, what do I do? I'm worried, I'm scared. My mom like stayed home with me, and
oh my gosh,
I wasn't able to cheer. It was like my whole life that I knew. Oh my gosh. Holy moly.
So then what happened?
It got really bad to the point where I didn't want to be around.
Oh my gosh. Yep.
And again, we went back to the doctors who we had, who were willing to see us. We grew up in a not great area of town.
Very Talk about late. That. Yes. What area did you grow up in?
It's now they're trying to rebrand it. Make it sound shinier, but it's still what it is. It was called the war zone. A lot of crime, a lot
of... That does
of
not being, sound good. What no. What state are we talking about here?
Albuquerque, New Mexico. Balloons and Breaking Bad is kind of what we're known for. Air balloons, we have a fiesta every year where hundreds of balloons go into the air. And then the show Breaking Bad. I've never seen it. It's everywhere.
I saw two episodes and I'm like, what is everybody talking about? This is the most depressing show ever.
Yeah, I couldn't. I was like, I don't watch TV, so
Good for you.
That's a whole different thing. Yeah. But that's the biggest thing we're known for is our crime right now. We don't have a lot of good that comes out of here. Okay. And that's cool.
And
not due to the crime, but we're okay with people not moving here right now.
Oh, okay. I get that. And so you come from a family, though. It sounds like there's quite a number of kids. Mm-hmm. You have a good mom. You've got a good dad.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I had a really good childhood. I was really protected and loved. I have no childhood trauma.
That's why you've done as well as you've done. Yes. Right?
Yes. I always had support. And my mom is a fighter. My mom has a cool story, too. She was a Chola in East LA growing up. And now you would never know. Like, she's just so cool. And like, so cool. But we grew up around a lot of crime, a lot of drug use, a lot of mental health. Mm-hmm. A lot of our friends had different lives than we had. So our house was kind of the gather spot. My mom was everybody's mom. Now she's everybody's grandma, but that was kind of the community. It was, my mom always said, like, everyone, yeah, gather. Sure, they can come. And we grew up, all of us from kindergarten till high school, same group of kids. And for the most part, most of us are doing good. We're doing well. So it's nice. But it's still a really rough neighborhood. It's much more rough now than it was then.
Are you still in that neighborhood?
I'm not. I had a goal for myself to move to the suburbs one day for myself. I enjoy it. I just wanted to give my kids a little bit better than I had.
Okay, so you live in the suburbs of this area, which they call the war zone.
Yeah.
But you are there regularly because that's where you do a lot of your work.
Yes. So I work 45 minutes away from my home. So I leave my house for kids stuff, take everyone to school. I leave about 6:20 after work and cheerleading practice right after work. I get home around 11 p.m. 4 nights a week, 5 if we have a game.
So let's go back to that 14, 15-year-old girl, mm-hmm. misdiagnosed with bipolar disorder, pitching down rapidly because she's on the wrong medication she should not be on. And people need to know that medication can cause all of these mental health symptoms, right?
Yes.
And medication is given to us by doctors. So we need to pay attention to how we feel. And the thing is, when you're 14 or 15 years old, how would you know that when there are 45, 55-year-old women, like I can raise my hand, that we're given medication and I'm like, I am progressively feeling worse and worse, but because a doctor prescribed it, I'm thinking, well, I should continue. And we have that ADHD personality that we're going to figure this out. We're going to persevere, right? That drivenness, many of us do. And so all of a sudden you lose sight of what it even feels like to feel good. And so this is happening to you at 14, 15 years old. So what happens then?
My mom didn't know what else to do. She asked the school counselor for resources, and they brought me in, talked to me. They were still concerned about the incident with the 6'2" football player. I was 4'11", 75 pounds. Like, he could flick me. And he didn't filter in either.
You can tell me, no, I'm not going to share it, but what did you do that was so bad?
I said, it was joking. I have a rough humor and he knew I was joking. He picked me up by my backpack. I was just frustrated that day. And I said, put me the F down. I'm going to slit your throat. And that's what they heard and went with it. And I was like, I can't even reach. Like, stop it.
Oh my God. I get maybe not the best choice of words, but I could totally see a teenager or someone, an adult, joking around and saying that. There was no weapon. There was nothing, right?
Yeah. And he was like, what is going on? He was like,
What about the fact that this 6-foot-plus football player thinks it's okay to take a 4'11" woman or any woman, young girl, whatever, and pick her up? Like, why wasn't that reprimanded?
I wasn't bothered. It was normal. Like, I grew up with these people. So we had like these relationships and we just were kind of always dogpiled on each other. And we were very aggressive with each other, I guess. And it was very weird now because I would feel the same way if someone picked up my daughter by the backpack friend or not. I'd be like, that's weird. But it was a different time then. So it was, I thought I was just like, not today, dude. Like, and then he didn't mess with me. He was like, oh, okay, cool. And we were going to go about our day, but the counselor probably had gotten a training, a new modern hip training, I'm assuming.
Liability, right? They're always worried about, you know, were there signs and did we do enough? I get it.
Yeah.
But that is insanity to me that experience is what leads you to be misdiagnosed, put on this medication. Oh my gosh, it's infuriating. So then what happened?
Because she was concerned that I was kind of plummeting, and with the threat that I made, I was now a danger to myself and others. So I was referred to inpatient hospitalization. And
you were struggling with suicidal ideation at that point because of the medication.
Yes. Okay. And they said, and I was on it at this point for 3 weeks. This is 3 weeks for medication. And they said, give it 6 weeks. And my mom was like, I don't want to. So my mom was like, they kept saying, if you get her off of it, it's going to be worse. So my mom is trusting and trying her best.
The expert.
Yeah. And so we go to this place. And again, my mom is like, thank you for all of your help. There's another family in the waiting room and they're joking and laughing. And I'm like, I'm not making the connection. Where am I? I didn't understand where I was. I didn't know what was going on. There wasn't a lot going on up there. That was connected.
Well, you're on all this medication. I'm sure you could barely cope.
Right. So my mom was like, can we get her off of this, please? Like, she needs to maybe get off of this in a safe environment. And they said, no, we're going to watch her to keep her safe, but we're also going to put her on this stuff. And my mom was like, no. So then they threatened to take my mom to court or agree.
Gosh, Alyssa.
Yeah. So I just kind of went through. I would just kind of gave up.
This is criminal.
And then I met some other kids who have, you know, they were in the foster care system. They were there because they didn't have anywhere else to go. No one wanted to take them in anymore. So they would put them, and this hospital thankfully is not open anymore. And they would just put them there. So I learned some tricks of the trade. And I was like, they're like, you've never been here. And I was like, no, I have no idea what I'm doing here. And they would go through their list of things. And I was like, I don't know what any of that is. I was 14. I didn't know how to wash my own clothes. I was like, ask for help. That's the only thing I remember, to ask for help. Can somebody help me? And they said, no, you're 14. And I was like, can I call my mom? And they said, no, you're 14. I was like, can she come pick it up? And so they did. They thought I was very entitled and bratty as well. And I may have come across that way. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I probably did.
Well, I'm sure at this point you are so angry and confused and on this awful medication that is messing with, you know, your entire brain.
I really didn't know what was going on. I had no idea. I just remember I remember bits and pieces and being put in like the padded room and getting chemically restrained. It was very rough.
And it's so scary, I'm sure.
Yeah. And so the other kids kind of took me into their group and they were like, come on, we're going to show you how to get out. I was like, we're going to break out. And they're like, we're going to get you out. So they taught me some tricks of the trade then, to like how to tongue and hide your meds. And they're like, you'll be fine. And I trusted them more than I trusted the doctors. They cared more about me. And they were there for me more than I could go to the staff. And so it was time for my family meeting so they could once again talk about how badly I was doing and nothing good I was doing because I didn't do anything. And we're 5 weeks in medication at this point. My poor mom is just losing her mind. And then they take me in a separate room and bring in this like 20 something year old medical student. And I don't remember his name. And poor guy, like in my head, I was like, oh, what is this bozo on? I called him Dr. Bozo. He was training, doing medical school stuff and under the supervision of an older gentleman who I also don't remember the name of. He was like, do you mind if he asks you some questions? I'm like, go ahead. Give me the list. I've checked the boxes. I've told you the stuff. I've done the things. And he goes, do you mind filling this out? And I was like, I don't care. Just give it to me.
Well, at this point, they've created, ADHD brain. You're so oppositional at this point, right? Because you don't trust anything that they're doing because you know they're wrong, despite the fact that you're 14 or 15.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know what's going on with me. Maybe it's just being, I don't know. Just give me the paper. I'll fill it out. I'll do the stuff. You can bill the insurance. Like you can even lie and say you billed it. You probably are anyway. Just give it to me. Mm-hmm. And so he was like, okay. And so I filled it out and he's like, did you pay attention to it? I said, absolutely not. I just kind of glanced over it. And he goes, would you mind really looking at it? And I was like, dude, come on. No, I don't want to. I was like, no. And he's like, I didn't see this in your file. And he's like, I'd really like you to fill it out. And I was like, fine. I didn't argue with adults. I was.
So were these ADHD scales? Was he trying to test you for?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. And he was like trying to like tell me like, please fill it out. And I was
I'm trying to save your life here.
And my mom always told me when an adult asks you once nicely and you say no. And then when they ask you again, they're like, I'm giving you another opportunity to make the choice. The third time is they're telling you. And that's how I was raised. And I'm okay with it. So once he said it third time, I was like, bye. So I did. I paid attention. I would read one and then I'd ask him a question. I'd read one and then I'd start asking the older gentleman. And took 4 hours to complete a tube. He goes, I think she has ADD. And he goes, no. And he goes, yeah, because he was like talking and I didn't understand. He's like, because if you look at this and this, they're doing all this stuff. I didn't even know what ADD was either. I was like, cool. Add another pill. That was my mind. I was like, cool. And he goes, can we maybe start a low dose of something? What I didn't know it was Adderall. And he was like, no. And he goes, why not? And he said, she lives in the 87108 zip code.
Oh, my gosh. And so this was the resident talking to his supervising doctor, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so the reason for not wanting, despite the scores versus the other scores, it came down to where I lived and the drugs that came out of that area. I was more likely to abuse those. Mm-hmm. Even though I came from a two-parent household and I checked all the other boxes, I checked this one.
Yeah.
And so they excused me. And then my mom came out. And she was like, you're not going to give her meth. I was like, why not? Can't get any worse than this. And so whatever happened with the adults screaming, they came out, redid the medication, tried the Adderall the next day. And I started to feel better. It was a very small dose. I don't even know what it was. It was a teeny tiny thing. And I just started to feel like me again. And I didn't feel weird. I didn't feel like I was on a drug. I started to become clear. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and I saw him again. I was like, hey, Bozo, why did you do that?
You literally called him Bozo.
Of course. Yes. I was bratty by that point. I was like, I don't want some 20-year-old punk telling me anything. Like, what do you know?
Uh-huh.
So I was like, hey, Bozo, why did you do that? And he goes, somebody has to. And that stayed with me. He said, somebody has to give a shit.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And you don't know his name. You're still calling him Bozo.
I can't get the medical records. They're closed. They've been closed for years. So Bozo, if you're out there, thanks.
Oh,
yeah.
He saved your life.
He did.
And hopefully by his supervising doctor, I always forget what that, it's called. But hopefully he saw. Right.
I think he was mad. Yeah, he did. And he was not happy that this kid was right. Wow. It was an ego thing. And that's typical still what we see now.
Unbelievable. OK, so let's talk about now what you do.
OK, so I have been at a new population for me. Uh-huh. I know their work. It's called Crossroads for Women. And I've always admired the work that they do in the community. They're very hands-on. They're in it. If something needs to get done, you will always see that butterfly on the back of someone's shirt, and you know they're going to do something.
What do they do?
It's called community support worker. And what we do is we go into the community and literally support the women who might not have support.
This is mental health.
Mental health, substance use, reintegration back into the community, just trying to live better is what we chalk it up to. They're trying to live better, just like everybody else. So what I like to think of it as is I see someone walking, they have all of these puzzle pieces and they're dropping them. And instead of just repeatedly helping them pick up the one, I like follow them and then watch them put it together. So I just help carry the stuff and just kind of be there with them.
What does your work look like? Like, what are the kinds of things that you help them with?
So it just depends on the client. Some I go and we go for a walk because they want to go for a walk. They don't know how to go alone. And it's weird and uncomfortable. I'm like, I'll go. We'll go to the bank. will go grocery shopping. We will sit there and I will be like the memes while I am doing something. They're cleaning their house. They're taking care of their children. It is very normal support that we take for granted every day that I'm lucky to have. And I think a lot of us are lucky to have that. We don't realize it's just very basic being there for somebody, but helping them instead of asking, like, do you need help? We say, let me help you. And you like, let me take that from you. Give me half of that. I'll carry half of that. Like, because most of the time, like, when someone's like, do you need help? You're like, no, I got it. And you'll just struggle along. And so we try to be very intentional. I try to be intentional with how I ask for things and how I want them to be open with me and what they need. And so sometimes it's just, Alyssa, I'm feeling bad. Can you give me a compliment? Yes. Yes, I can.
So what is the history of most of these women?
They come from where I come from. Rough backgrounds. Probably saw some of the same doctors for some of the same stuff. And possibly chose to go the self-medication route. And ended up incarcerated, ended up with more mental health issues, ended up, you know, kind of not being able to achieve some of the higher education, the work experience, because they end up stuck in the war zone. And so, yeah.
And what that must do on a day-to-day basis to your nervous system to grow up and live in what you guys call a war zone, right?
Yeah.
It's no different than literally, you know, being a refugee or, you know, stuck in a war zone, right? In another country.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're constantly emotionally dysregulated because you're constantly afraid, you can see what that would do to your brain.
Right. And I almost feel safer walking there than I do here because I know everybody there. Like, that's...
Yeah, it's what you grew up with, right?
That's my hood, yeah. And I know I present very different than that, but that's because I don't like to make those things my personality, and I don't like to... I am a person, and I come from somewhere, and I have some stuff, but I also... I am also a mom
and that's also though why these women trust you, right?
Yeah. And I'm like, guys, I messed up too. I'm learning too. I have no idea what's going on, and I have been lucky. I don't think it was anything but luck that I did not develop a substance use issue in my life, and that I didn't develop, I never experienced kind of some of the higher mental health stuff. I was treated for ADHD only. I didn't have to go to counseling. I grew up with it. So after the shock that I went through, it was all downhill from there. It was nice. It was, you know, like, it was, in comparison, every day was sunny. So I'm kind of like, I don't know. And they tell me they'll be kind of resistant at first. I worked with men before, and I got the same pushback. Well, what do you know? And I tell them nothing. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything. And that's the beauty, because I don't know. And I'm not going to tell you to do it my way. We're going to figure it out what works for you. And I'm not going to do what worked for them. We're going to figure it out. Work together. We're going to just go. Like, we don't need to go back. We don't need to relive stuff. I don't need to know that stuff. I want to know what you want to do now and what you need to get done now and where you want to go. And then let's go there.
It's me again, Tracy. You know how people often assume that if you have ADHD, you're just lazy, unmotivated, and not living up to your full potential? Well, I'm here to tell you they've got it all wrong, except for the part about not reaching your full potential. But that's only because you haven't found the right strategies tailored for your unique ADHD brain. And that's exactly why I wrote ADHD for Smartass Women. This book, it's designed to help you understand the different approaches that work for your distinct brain, inspiring you to become the best version of yourself right now. You can grab a copy wherever books are sold. And if you've already read my book, please take a moment to leave a review on Amazon and Goodreads. Your feedback, it not only supports me and my publisher, but it also helps other smart-ass women and their kids, friends, and colleagues find the strategies they need to thrive. Every review makes a huge difference. So go write a review now or buy the book now before you forget. Okay, back to our usual programming.
Yeah. And ultimately, it is a privilege to have been raised by two parents that love you, right? Right away, if you have that, you're at a completely different level. And I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
So I love that you appreciate that as well.
Yes, I do.
So I am curious. We were talking about doctors who won't prescribe medication that is needed because you live in a certain zip code. Are you still seeing a lot of that? And how do you address those issues?
So there's a lot that are, there's not a lot of local doctor's offices in the area anymore. Mm-hmm. There's not even grocery stores within walking distance. They all closed. So it's very difficult. It's really hard. There is services, but I think the wait lists, they're not doing wait lists. They're like, we'll call you in 2 years is what. And we got to bust through doors, knock on doors, call every day, be a pain in the keister. And it's hard when you are trying to reach out for help and you get told no. And yeah. And then what you get is what you get because you're just so glad to get an appointment. You're like, I'll take it. You don't get it. Or I wait 2 years. So you get what you get.
And do you think those women are still getting doctors who don't understand what ADHD looks like generally, but also specifically what ADHD looks like in women?
Yes. Mm. Yeah. And I try really hard not to encourage that diagnosis. And I share my struggles as well. But mm-hmm. I also don't want to kind of... with that population and the population specifically, I also don't want to, it's a balance. It's understanding that yes, it could be, but it also could help. And it also could have prevented, but it's seeing where they're at. Mm-hmm. And also maybe exploring some of the newer stuff like non-stimulant, uh-huh. things that could be a benefit.
Exercise, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and those things kind of work. So that's why we're like, well, we got to do it. We got to figure it. We got the lists. So how do we do the list? Like, how do we see what works? So I do it with them. So one of the things we're trying out now, we have like those like fever patches for the kids when they're sick. Mm-hmm. I put it on the back of my arm because it like regulates my like body temperature. When I start feeling nervous, it's a DBT skill. And it changes your body temperature and kind of helps regulate you. So I have the cooling patch on for really, really intense situations. So I'm literally able to keep my cool. And we try out different things in real life situations and see what works.
Where did you hear about that? I've not ever heard of it.
So I went through DBT therapy.
So are we talking about dialectical behavioral therapy?
Yes.
Tell us what it is. I mean, emotion, right? We're trying to regulate.
Yeah, it's like when you start feeling your like anxiety levels rise. I'm not an expert on this. I'm not trained.
Sounds like you actually are trained, right? You went through training for this.
Yeah. So one of the things that they get the lists, the damn lists. I get so mad at the lists.
What is the list?
I know. I got to go back to what those are. It's the checkboxes and the resource lists that are never updated, that are useless, that it's like, okay, here's 100 coping skills. Now go. How am I going to do a puzzle in the car with my kids to calm down? Like, those are not realistic things for people.
Okay.
Like, stop with the damn list. Like, okay. Let's look at what works. So I went through it and I was like, yeah, I have that. And I don't want to do that. And she's like, want to try? I'm like, sure, I'll let you know how it goes while I'm hiking, driving at the grocery store. Like, I need something that I can do when I'm in the moment when I have to function, when I have to be a mom, when I have to show up for my husband, when I have to show up for my kids, when I have to show up for me. And she taught me about tips. It stands for something. Temperature. I remember the temperature one because that's the one that helps me the most. You're supposed to like dunk your face in cold water. Also not realistic for me to do. So I've gotten creative with it. I was walking down Walgreens. It was like cooling patches. And I was like, is that like those heat patches? And my husband had to explain to me what they were. And I was like, do they work? He's like, yeah. And I was like, I might try those. He's like, for what? And I was like, you know, when I get all like anxious, I say anxious and weird. And he's like, yeah. And I was like, and I start rubbing like my water bottle all over my face. And he's like, yeah. I was like, what if I just like put that on my arm instead? And he's like, I was like, that way it's not like a big deal. It's discreet and still doing something about it. And you don't have to cause attention or explain or apologize.
Does it work?
It does. Yeah. Yep. For me, it does. And I think it's part of the reason of where it is. Usually it's covered, or I'll have them like on this area where it just could be hidden. And they last for like 8 hours. So it's, for me, it does work. So I don't have to stop what I'm doing and make it about me, because when I'm doing work for other people, it's not about me. Mm-hmm. They don't accommodate me. They're not there to be patient with me. Like, I got to get it together and show them like, look, like, let's try this. If it doesn't work, let's try that. We're going to really try the stuff that normal people can do and just living normal lives. Like, we're not glamorous, but we're amazing. We're fun.
Well, I'm sure they've had some pretty incredible experiences.
Yeah.
However, you couldn't do your work. So I always say that our best purposes give meaning to our past. So because of what you experienced, that's what gives you the drive, the motivation, the interest, but also I think just the intuitive just knack of knowing what to do and when to do it because of what you went through, right?
Yeah, and I think both those words really stuck with me. Like, someone has to give a shit. Like, somebody has to care. I appreciate the people who go and sign the petitions to say they do want that change. But I want to do something about it. Ah. And that's where we start at the front end, with kind of teaching and getting in front of, before they could potentially get exposed to something else, because there isn't that program available. So I try to help all around.
And the thing is, if we don't get the proper mental health medical care up front, why wouldn't you expect people to try to go seek it out on their own? And that means self-medicating, right? With mm-hmm. alcohol and, you know, drugs,
everything,
all of
yeah.
that, right?
Or violence, getting all of worse it. And not being able to function, not being able to go to work, not being able to do things to live.
So have you had clients, women who you've talked to, and they have a sense that, yeah, I think I have ADHD, and they try to get help, are not able to get help. They actually maybe do get help, but then it's totally the wrong kind of help. Have you had to advocate for them and help them navigate through situations like that?
No, not yet. I kind of went in and rolled up my sleeves and got to work. They were, you know, had staffing changeovers and resources quicker than they could bill. And I had worked with the higher needs population before. So I can deal with it. So I'm like, I might not know how to use your systems, but I can help. Here's what I have. Here's what I can do. If not, I understand. I'll be on my way. But I just kind of rolled up my sleeves and got to work and started calling them and just getting to know them as people. And they would, everyone does it when you're seeing somebody in that type of setting, is they'll go to what's wrong with them. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, no, we'll get there. I can see it too. I can look it up. I'm like, but I'm just getting to know you. So who are you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, who are you? I want to know who you are. Well, I have this. Okay. And I really like direct them back. Like, let's find out who you are. Maybe you don't know.
Because that is what it is all about. When we know who we are, when we know what's important to us, we make decisions and we know, you know, what our passions and our purpose are. Because, you know, with ADHD, we can be all over the place. Yeah. But when we're clear on those things, then we start making decisions that serve us. And when we serve ourselves first and know exactly the answer to those questions, then it makes it so much easier to help other people who need our help.
Yes. And also recognizing when you're able to and when you're not able to be there and to show up.
What does that mean?
Checking in with yourself, advocating for yourself and making sure you seek environments, if you're able to, that are willing to listen. I wouldn't do well in the corporate world. I'm not good. I would not do well.
Most of us wouldn't.
I'm not good at school. We've discovered. I had no interest in pursuing anything else. I still don't. I don't need to. And checking in and figuring out what, if you can help someone that day. Sometimes it's no. And it's not pushing yourself to the point where you're dealing with people, our kids, our neighbors, anyone where they're like, are you okay? I never want any of my cheerleaders, any of the other kids, any of, it's weird saying peers at Highland, any of my clients, I don't ever want them to check on me. I don't want them to have to feel like they have to be there for me because they don't. And that's something I really keep separate. I'm really, really intentional with my boundaries. I am there for you. I don't really disclose a lot about myself to them. They know like I have kids and stuff, but it's not about me. Self-disclosure is one of the things that I like to have something for myself. Yeah. And my family is very protective. And I have a really supportive work environment. I'm still fairly new to their environment, but it's been so nice to work with women. It is such a nice change of pace. They're so wonderful. It's just like the whole environment that they have created and the culture that is created there. It's nothing but support. It's what do you need? How can we help on the back and even with staff? Awesome. I reached out to one of my coworkers this morning. I'm like, hi, I'm feeling really insecure and nervous. I don't do this. I don't do social media. I just kind of tell people what to do. I don't do this. This is not my thing. And he's like, so I'm like, can you send me some words of encouragement, please? And he did.
You're
so,
asking for help. You learned how to do it.
I learned. And so he was like, you are great. He's like, I want to be you when I grow up. And I'm like, thank you. So we shared some inside jokes and I got my stuff together as best as I could.
And then we had all those tech problems. But can I say, so it is stressful when you're coming on. You've never done a podcast before. Yeah. The tech is supposed to work. It doesn't work. And I could see Alyssa and I could hear her. She could not do the same. And she brought her son over there, who's 14 years old, right? He was the most calm, mild-mannered, kind. You know, I think most 14-year-old kids, teenagers, would be, you know, sending quips and acting irritated. And he was so lovely and calm. And you were actually really good with him. You were super calm. You didn't know I could see you.
No, I had no idea.
I was so impressed at your whole family, meaning your son and you, your abilities to regulate all of your emotions. Everyone just seemed so calm and like together. And so I kept sending her messages. I'm actually laughing, Alyssa. This is funny. Don't worry. We'll get it together.
And that's what I do. I just go and then I mess things up and then things happen and I get stuck in places and then I just keep going. And my kids just are used to it. That my husband said his favorite thing about me is just watching me exist. He's like, that there's nothing funnier and nothing more genuine than just watching you just try to exist. He's like, you just, you're tangled in your glasses and your badge and your purse. And he's like, you're walking by, you're getting stuck to the house with your leggings getting pulled to the stucco and getting swung back around. And he's like, I don't understand how those things happen. He's like, but I just enjoy watching. He's like, it's just, and he's, oh my gosh, he has to just, he deals with everything and he's amazing. He's.
So you really got that right. Just like your mom. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is so, it's the most important relationship, especially for those of us with ADHD. When we have someone who loves and supports us exactly the way we are and, you know, gets a kick out of watching you navigate all this. And I think when he says that, it's not just, oh, kind of the comedy of, you know, but also where you get yourself to. Right. Mm-hmm. And you're constantly in action. Like you said, you're not so much in your head. You're much more, how can I make a difference? You use that drivenness. And I think that that's what works for you, right? That's why it works.
Yeah. I don't think a lot. I mean, I do, but I kind of just, I know where I'm going. I know what I have to do and I will get there no matter what I have to do. I will get there.
Yeah.
Even if I have to come kids in tow, cheerleaders watching kids, like we're a community, guys. Like we help each other. We're in this together. Like, let's go. Like,
I love it. So what are the ADHD traits that you feel are responsible for your success?
The inattentiveness, and the fact that I cannot remember a thing to save my life. So
okay,
I can't.
Wait a second. So are those the things that you feel are responsible for your success, or are those the things you do? Okay. So explain why. I've never had an answer like that.
Because it helps me be able to be everything to everybody a little bit. I can drip a little.
You can flit. Like,
yeah. I can just do stuff and then remember to come back to this thing and pick it up. And it works for me, and it doesn't work for everybody. But it works for me that I can jump and I have the freedom to bounce around, and juggle things and write stuff and spiral everywhere. And people just kind of watch me exist and fumble around, and they know what, I'm fine. I'm good. They know I'm okay. That's really what it is. And that I can't take anything personal because I will not remember it. I have no idea what's going on.
I love that one.
Yeah. And they're like, I'm sorry. I said this. I'm like, when?
I can never be mad at anyone. Right.
Yeah. I'm like, I didn't even know that happened. Just things like that always happen. I was thinking about where I sent my medication to, because I always send it to different places thinking I'm going to be there. So I have refills all over town and I have to hunt them down all the time.
So what do you think the key to living successfully with ADHD is?
I think I've always been quirky. I don't know if that's because of that. I don't define myself as somebody who has ADHD. I am who I am, and I separate from that. I happen to have ADHD on the back end. And I usually, I think that's for me, is being my own person and not being that, being a diagnosis, because it does have some stuff with it on how it became.
So it's a label, but
yeah, and because of where I grew up, I've always had to overcome those things. And I appreciate anybody who does embrace it for them and who are embracing that part of themselves. And I think that's great. I am all for whatever works. For me, it's being who I am without a label, without anybody knowing where I come from, just me today.
You are such a role model, though, I'm sure, and an example in your community for how brilliant the ADHD brain is, how empathetic the ADHD brain is, and how you give us a job, we buy into it, we will get it done quicker and better than anyone else. And you're also, it sounds like, really able to amass a community around you that really cares about you and wants to push you out there instead of trying to push you down, right? And say, no, you need to fit in.
Yes. I've been lucky that I've been encouraged to be me. They're like, go do the thing. I'm like, what thing? And everyone will share their favorite Alyssa moments, and they are ridiculous. I'm like, when? It's like hearing it all over again. They tell the same ones. I'm like, oh my God, when? Like, I have no idea. And it's so funny every time. And I just embrace the airheadedness sometimes. It's a positive thing to me. I'm okay with it. It helps me do what I need to do for other people to be better. I'm good with it.
You know, it's interesting that you just said, and I think that is literally the key for all ADHD brains. Your goal is always to be you. And that should be all of our goals, to be more of who we really are. Part of the challenge there is we need to figure out what that is or who that is, right?
Yeah. Do I like myself today? Do I like the person I was today? No? Okay, try again. And maybe we don't like that person we thought we wanted to be. And then we come back to who we are.
I love it. I love it. Alyssa, thank you so much for spending time with us here today. So if someone wanted to reach out to you, like you reached out to me, can they, and where should they go? How should they do it?
So again, I'm really private, but I do run the Highland Cheerleading page. I know we didn't get to talk about them a lot, but I encourage everyone to go see their progress. They have a really cool story. They're doing really good things. It is Highland Hornets Cheerleading on Instagram.
Okay. Highland.
It's HIGHLAND. And then Hornets, HORNETS, Cheerleading.
Wow. So it's on Instagram and it's at Highland Hornets Cheerleading.
Yes.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Alyssa, again, thank you so much. I really, really enjoyed meeting you.
And thank you.
Thank you so much for what you do.
Yeah.
So that's what I have for you for this week. If you liked this episode with Alyssa, please let us know by leaving a review. Our goal, you know what it is to change the conversation around ADHD and help as many women as we possibly can learn how their ADHD brains work so that they too may discover their amazing strengths. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you here next week. And don't forget, go order my book, ADHDforsmartwomen.com/book. Okay, thank you.
You've been listening to the ADHD for Smartass Women podcast. I'm your host, Tracy Otsuka. Join us at ADHDforsmartwomen.com, where you can find more information on my new book, ADHD for Smartass Women, and my patented Your ADHD Brain is A-OK system to help you get unstuck and fall in love with your brilliant brain.
Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you here next week. And don't forget to sign up for our free live virtual training, 3 days to fall in love with your ADHD brain, starting on April 15th at spyhappy.me/3days. I'm telling you, it's life-changing.